It is panel time here on SENZ, and this morning we have got Andrew Gordy and Patrick McKendry, two very experienced journalists, along to talk on a number of issues. Andrew Gordy, I know, would like to have a little opinion on Brooks Koepka and the LIV. It's turning into a circus, this, mate.
This is remarkable, isn't it? Morning, Smithy. Morning, Pat. Morning to all the listeners. I've got to say, I'm astounded to read morning. The dominoes just keep falling, don't they? And you've really got to wonder where this is going to end, if this is going to end. But boy, if you're in charge of the PGA Tour right now, you are in full-blown panic mode, because Brooks Koepka, assuming he is going to make the switch, and it seems now widely reported that he is going to leave the PGA Tour and join LIV Golf, it will mean now that LIV Golf has signed 8 of the top 50 players in the world. Now, we obviously know that they've already got the likes of Dustin Johnson, they've got Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, Phil Mickelson, obviously. These are massive names. And it is, like I say, you just really do wonder where this is going to end, because at the moment, the PGA Tour, and indeed the majors, who I just think have an enormous part to play in what we're seeing here, they're powerless, because the money that is on offer here is life-changing, and it is game-changing for the sport. And I think what we're seeing right now is the PGA Tour just simply being torn apart. And you've got players like Colin Morikawa. He's another. He's a fourth-ranked player in the world. He was rumoured to be the next to be going to make the switch. He's come out today and stated again that he's committed to the PGA Tour. He's staying. Nothing has changed in that regard. But you just wonder how seriously we can take statements like that. It just feels like the situation and the landscape is changing so quickly. We're seeing players, and we have seen some of these players say, no, I'm committed to the PGA Tour and I'm not moving. And then suddenly, something's changed and they are making that move. And what's changing is the enormous checks that are being placed under their nose to go and do this. It's a quite a remarkable thing we're seeing here for the world of golf. And yeah, I'm absolutely captivated by it, to be honest. And I mean, I know we've spoken at length about whether golfers are right to be making this move, and whether they're right to be accepting money from Saudi Arabia, essentially. This debate is going to go on, and it feels like the tipping point has been reached, and there is no going back here. And it seems now that it's widely accepted, that what essentially we had a handful of players go, and now they're all going. And yeah, the PGA Tour is in massive trouble right now.
Yeah, it is. Patrick McKendry, good morning to you. And that's a shame, because I think we've seen in the last couple of weeks the value of, and the support of golf at the Canadian Open in particular, just the regular PGA event as such. And then the US Golf Open, and if these guys are going to be banned, if they go and they're going to be banned from playing in such events, golf's the loser overall, isn't it? Even though a lot of individuals are going to be quite the winners, aren't they?
Yeah, look, I think it's quite sad, to be honest. Gord's touched on the from what I heard there, he touched on the sort of the moral element of it, and I feel it is immoral what they're doing. Taking cash effectively to enhance the reputation of a regime that rules Saudi Arabia as it does. And the hypocrisy that's involved and the professionals sort of explaining away their reasons for doing it, it comes down to money, pure and simple. And these guys are rich enough. I mean, how much money do you need? It's crazy. And they're just being seduced by larger amounts of money and extra zeros on the end. And I just think it's mad, to be honest. And it's quite sad what's happening. It is sad for golf, and it's sort of tearing apart the fabric of really what makes it special in terms of the PGA Tour and in particular the majors, which are special indeed.
Patrick, I haven't clued you up on this or given you any inside info. I was going to ask you this, but I read a story yesterday about Frank Warren, of course, and the falling out now between Joyce and Parker. Doesn't seem that fight's going to happen either. He's, of course, a Joyce man. And it's looking like it might be a little bit bitter in that regard, saying he's never really wanted the fight, Joseph Parker. In other words, he's running from it.
I don't know about bitter. I think all is fair in love and boxing, to be honest. Things get said, which no one really means. I mean, you look at the build-up of just about every big professional fight that's ever happened. All sorts of things get said and done, and you know they're all mates afterwards. No, look, I don't think Joseph Parker is running away from Joe Joyce. It just the deal just didn't work out, and he decided to go with another promoter. Whether that means that fight, I mean, that fight still could be made, and I think Joe Parker himself has said that people need to put their egos aside. Because Frank Warren is aligned with a different broadcast platform, and now Joe has gone, basically got to Sky Sport in the UK, and Joe said, "I'll fight Joe Joyce on Sky Sport." You know, it makes no difference to me. Frank Warren needs to put his ego aside and let it happen. So, I mean, that was always going to be a massive test for Joe Parker, because that is probably a 60-40 fight in Joe Joyce's favour, I feel. But it's a big fight, and he wants big fights. You know, he knows that the clock is ticking on his professional career, Joe Parker. You know, he probably only has 3 years to go before he retires and does something else. So he wants the big fights because that's where the test is and that's where the money is. Simple as that. So as for running away from him, no, I don't think that's the case at all.
What do you make of it, Andrew?
I think Frank Warren's embarrassed, actually, and he can say all he likes about Joseph Parker, but Frank Warren's only got himself to blame because he went off completely half-cocked announcing this fight when they did as part of a broadcast. He broke all the rules. There was an agreement in place about the language that was going to be used around that fight in particular and the stage of the negotiations that were at. You go back and watch the interviews that took place. Joe was basically had a microphone thrust in front of his face in a live broadcast. And the language he used was far from certain, whereas Frank Warren went all in, knowing full well that the deal wasn't done, and now he's got evil over his face because Joe's decided to go elsewhere and get a better deal. He tried to strong-arm Joe and his management team into a deal that they hadn't accepted yet, and now he's embarrassed because Joe's pulled out. He's only got himself to blame.
Okay, 10:32 here on SENZ. Some good fighting talk from Patrick McKendry and Andrew Gordy there. And we'll have more of that on a couple of other issues after the news here from Aroha.
Big Opinions, the panel. Talk to me,
yeah. Andrew Gordy with us this morning, Patrick McKendry and Andrew Gordy. Originally, when Hamish McLennan, RA's Rugby Australia's chairman, made the statement that we're thinking about leaving, some people were saying it was a shot across the bow to get a bigger slice of the pie as such. But he's come back again and he's laughed off comments from former All Blacks, etc. Where do you think this is heading?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, and I'm not sure I've got the answer for you because it's really intriguing, isn't it? He is completely bullish about this, despite what seemingly every other stakeholder in Australian rugby is saying. He is, ploughing this role alone, really, isn't he? I'm not sure where it's ending up. I'm very sceptical of the timing of his comments, obviously, shortly ahead of a Super Rugby final that no Australian team was in. I'd certainly understand the challenges that they have in their market compared to our one, because there are obviously other sports that they are in strong competition with, rugby league and AFL being the two major ones, obviously. They're not getting as much money as they feel that they should. And their teams are losing. They've been better this year, but they are not successful, and it is very hard to attract new eyeballs and maintain the eyeballs that you have on your sport when your teams just simply aren't succeeding. So I guess he's looking at it and going, Super Rugby, and there was a surge in interest in Australia when it was only Australian teams playing because, well, they were winning. And so they think that they can cultivate, I suppose, this ecosystem where, the noise is, it's a bit of an echo chamber, I suppose, isn't it? You can't get beaten if you're not playing the best teams week in, week out. Now, that feels like a short-term play to me, and taking a very insular view. But he does have, you know, there's some merit to his argument, because he knows very, very well, especially now that South Africa is not part of the competition, that New Zealand rugby does need Australia to have a successful Super Rugby competition. And he probably is looking at the fact that, yep, New Zealand rugby pulls a decent number from Sky, and that New Zealand rugby has just had a massive cash injection by, you know, to a degree, selling a massive part of them, selling their soul, so to speak. Mm. And so he's looking at New Zealand rugby, they're cashed up, they need us, so he's using it as an opportunity, I suppose. Do I think Australia will ultimately walk away? Probably not, but I think they're ready to negotiate and play hardball with New Zealand rugby.
Yeah, it's interesting that from our side of things, Patrick, we've just heard one comment out of Mark Robinson, our CEO at this point, nothing from our chairman as such, just to the extent with, let's not play this out in the media, you know, let's sit down and talk about it the way we've sorted out other issues in the past. But the Australians, Phil Kearns included, seem to want to make it very public, sort of spat, if it is that.
Yeah, I can understand New Zealand rugby's approach, because I think it was the approach really which played a big part in creating this problem in the first place. Really, when you go back and look at Brent Timpey's actions and comments towards Australian rugby, and his sort of attitude of we don't really need you, it was that perceived arrogance really which has kicked this off. And I do understand McLennan's point of view. I don't think it's sustainable, because there's no way Australian rugby is going to get better playing amongst themselves. I think we saw some sort of green shoots of improvement this season. You know, the Brumbies were a pretty good, pretty competitive outfit. We saw some good stuff from the Waratahs and Reds as well. So I just can't see how they can improve playing amongst themselves, and certainly not on an international level. You know, I guess it is all about timing, and with England arriving soon as well, which would be a highly anticipated series. But you have to think, you know, if the Aussies just played amongst themselves over the last sort of 5 or 6 months, what sort of a chance would they be of beating England over 3 tests in Australia? I just can't see it happening. So it's interesting, it's entertaining from a bystander's point of view or a media point of view. But really, I just think it's probably simply saber rattling. Really, and it seems like a prelude to negotiations.
Mm. Patrick, before I let you go, there's another test match tomorrow night. I don't think the World Test Champions, current West World Test Champions, can afford to be whitewashed in England by an England side that prior to the first test match seemed to be a rabble. This is important.
I'd settle for a draw at this point, Smitty, to be honest. Having watched 2 tests in which New Zealand appeared to put themselves in very strong positions, if not unbeatable positions, to see them sort of slide so quickly at the end was disappointing, to say the least. Because I don't think it's a great England team either. You know, I think they've shown real vulnerabilities at times. I know there's been a lot of noise about McCallum's arrival and things, but I think New Zealand will be very disappointed with how things have played out. They've had some great opportunities to win both of those tests, and they haven't taken them. So, yeah, I mean, a whitewash would be quite disastrous, as you say.
I think so.
I'd be settling for a draw. Yeah.
Okay. Gords, Wagner, yes? And what after that?
Absolutely, yes. Neil Wagner's got to be sitting there going, what have I done? What has he offended Gary Stead in some way, or the selectors? I mean, what does this guy have to do? I mean, he has nothing to prove. He has won test matches for New Zealand. I'm saying things that have already been said by 100 other people before, but he's a hard on the sleeve guy. He's a competitor, and he's the guy that you want in the trenches, and they're in the trenches right now. They're the World Test Champions. They're 2-0 down. The series is gone against a team who were an absolute rebel coming into this test. And part of me actually wonders, is Brendan McCullum just in the heads? Has he managed to get into the New Zealand's heads, I suppose, ahead of this? Have they been sort of outplayed mentally in this test, I wonder. I'm really struggling to put my finger on it. But look, you've got a few players who are obviously, well, you've got Devin Conway, obviously, Michael Bracewell is recovering from COVID, and you've got Kane Williamson coming back as well. And boy, is there some pressure on his shoulders. I mean, I was on this panel last week, and you know, Mark Watson gave a pretty strong opinion on Kane Williamson. I'm not quite there with him, but the point is, Kane Williamson has a bit of a point to prove coming into this test match. He's going to be leading a side again that, as I say, is 2-0 down in the series, looking to avoid embarrassment, frankly. And he's going to have to lift his game. He's got, you know, Ben Stokes and in particular Joe Root, who is creating an interesting narrative, I suppose, for Kane Williamson at the moment. He's a guy who's been relieved of the captaincy duties and is playing some of the best cricket he's played in a long time. And, yeah, that, you know, whether you agree that or not that that is something that should happen with Kane Williamson, personally I don't. But the point is, he's got to go out there and show some leadership and show us that he's still one of the best batsmen in the world on his day, for sure. There is an awful lot to turn around here. But yes, to go back to the original point, I am really scratching my head about Neil Wagner. And I get the sense even that some of the other players are scratching their heads about why Neil Wagner hasn't been included in the first two test matches of a series against England, that now we find ourselves 2-0 down in. I mean, he's simply has to come back into the side, and I think we'll see a response from him. And I certainly hope we'll see a response from the team as well.
Andrew Gordy, Patrick McKendry have been our panellists this morning. Gentlemen, thank you very much for those considered opinions. We'll have another panel, same time, tomorrow morning.